man, is that the Rock News Weekly podcast?
Yeah, man. Well, turn it up, man.
This is Rock News Weekly. Every week, we bring you all the latest headlines in rock, metal, indie, grunge, alt, and classic rock news, this week's new releases, this week in music history trivia, movies, pop culture, and more. Now on to this week's episode. This week on the Rock News Weekly podcast, week of April 8th, 2024, season 6, episode number 14. This week we talk about Kiss selling their entire music catalog, logo, image, and likeness for millions in a huge landmark deal. AC/DC selling 1.5 million tickets in just one day for their upcoming European tour. And Adrian Belew, Tony Levin, Steve Vai, and Danny Carey sit down to discuss the origins, inspirations, and plans for their newly announced Beat Tour, which will focus on the 80s era of King Crimson and more. Plus, this week in rock and roll history trivia, weekly WTF, and so much more. Everything's up, rocknewsweekly.com. Watch us live every Sunday, twitch.tv/rocknewsweekly, and on demand, youtube.com/rocknewsweekly. All right, it's time for the Rock News Weekly podcast. What's up, everybody? Chris here, as well as David. David, how's it going, man?
I'm good.
Nice, man. So we missed you last week. How was the holiday week for you?
You know, it was relaxing. It was pretty nice. Got to do some activities. Went out of town a little bit. Got to go snowboarding.
Nice.
Yeah, it was nice.
Very cool. All right, well, let's get to the Rock News this week. April 8th. We got lots to talk about, as you just heard on the intro. Kiss selling their entire catalog, AC/DC selling out their European tour, and a bunch of other stuff, especially with the guys from the Beat Tour, Adrian Belew, Tony Levin, Steve Vai, Danny Carey. We're going to talk about all that stuff coming up. Check us out, rocknewsweekly.com. Follow us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, all at Rock News Weekly, same as YouTube. Watch everything on demand. Watch us live, twitch.tv/rocknewsweekly. We're live right now. And let's get to this interview. So there was an interview. You missed it last week, David. We were talking about this kind of super group that was announced and the tour that was announced. Beat performing the 80s albums Discipline, Three of a Perfect Pair, and Beat from King Crimson. Hasn't been attempted by any group ever. And we've heard different incarnations of Tony Levin's Stickmen and Adrian Belew's Power Trio doing different versions of King Crimson tracks. But this seems to be the most kind of comprehensive. They're going to delve straight into these albums. It's a really cool interview on Rick Beato's YouTube channel, so I recommend checking it out in full and supporting his YouTube channel as well. I'm going to play a couple little clips of the interview here. Adrian talking about how it started, the origins of King Crimson, Danny Carey talking about how he got involved, Tony talking about his rig, Steve Vai talking about how he's going to interpret Robert Fripp's guitar, which is kind of like a, you know, doing your best to do an Eddie Van Halen. He's very signature, very disciplined style of music. So it's going to be a really interesting live show. I got tickets for the show in Napa, so I'm going to be going.
Cool.
Yeah, I got a meet and greet. I splurged for the meet and greet, and we got front row seats. So
wow.
I'm really excited for it. Yeah, it's kind of a bucket list show for me. So I'll report back, and I'll show my photo, and if, you know, all that stuff comes to fruition like it should, that'll be in September, so can't wait for that. So let's get to this interview, though. I'm sure you guys want to hear it. I listened to this. It's a great interview. Rick Beato, YouTube channel, so check it out. Here it is.
In the David Bowie band that we do, celebrating David Bowie, his name is Scroat. He and I were discussing the idea that, you know, the music of the 80s that I was a part of with King Crimson should be played again somehow. I had called Robert Fripp and said, do you realize that in 2 years, it's going to be the 40th anniversary of the first record we did, Discipline? And I think we should try to do something with that. And he declined eventually. We talked about it, but finally he declined. But he said to me, well, but if you want to do something with it and you want to drive it, go for it. And he would try to support it. So we started talking, and I said, well, first of all, you've got to find the right person to replace Robert, and if that, you know, someone who can at least do what he does in their own way. And I said, the only one I can think of is Steve Vai. So I called Steve, and he was amazingly excited about the idea. And he, you know, he said, I love that music. And you know, da-da-da, and I thought, oh, wow, this is great then. So we started thinking, Scrote and I, where we go from here. Steve recommended someone who couldn't do it, eventually couldn't do it, and we never got to the bass player. We never got that far because of something called COVID. So, call Steve back. Well, yeah, I'm still really excited, but I've got 18 months of touring booked ahead of me. Okay. The finally, long story short, we finally got to the point where it was possible to do this, and consequently, at that point, it was possible to have Tony Levin because he was no longer on tour with Peter Gabriel. And then I went to see Tool. They're old friends of mine, Danny Carey. And I said, there's no one I'd rather, I can't imagine anyone doing Bill Bruford better than him, because I knew his background. He said the same thing, that the Discipline album really was a changing point musically in his life. And then we had it, you know? And then it was just down to putting it all together with the production team. Miles Copeland is at the head of that. And we have a guy named Steve O'Glendinning from London. So nice team of people put together, ready to go. Our booking agent was just here telling us it's a go. Mm-hmm. Fortunate for us, because it was just announced all over the internet.
Okay, so Tony, you joined King Crimson that year, right? In 1981
for the
Discipline record, both of you guys. That was your first record. So those three records have the three primary colors, Discipline and Beat, and Three of a Perfect Pair. Now, you haven't played this music since how long?
It does come up in a few bands we play in, in different versions of it, and probably maybe all of us. I haven't played most of it in a long, long time.
Some of it you have played, though.
Sure. Not to mention with King Crimson, but some of it with King Crimson, some of it in other bands. I've even done jazz versions of some of it in a jazz band I'm in, but most of it I have not played in a really long time.
Okay, so Danny, what about, have you played through the songs, like as a kid? Did you play to these records?
I played to them, in my parents' attic or something, you know. But I've never performed them live, really, to speak of, other than sitting in with Adrian. And
actually, we have played Frame by Frame and Thalia and Gingy quite a few times when he sat in.
Trio thing, maybe, yeah. Because, and the Stickmen were on that one run, weren't they?
Yeah.
So we all, we would play, and then you guys would play, and then I think at the end we'd all get together and have a crazy jam on some cool Crimson stuff.
This is the man who's not played this music at all, right here.
No pressure.
I've certainly oogled at it quite often, you know.
Oogled or googled?
Both. Googled. Both. But my history is, when I was young, I was exposed to Robert Fripp on Exposure. And I knew that there was something going on there that was different, you know. One thing is different than the others. And I just was attracted to his musical mind and his creativity. I hardly played the guitar, you know, so long ago. So I kind of followed through the years, and I loved the old King Crimson stuff. In the 80s, when those three records came out, they were really monoliths, because they, especially for someone like myself, because they really showcased a complexity that scratches a particular itch that I have nothing else really reaches, but it's accessible.
That's a pretty good description of King Crimson. It's like musicians appreciate it because it's very complex, but it's also accessible in a lot of ways too. So it's a really cool kind of combination of things that they got going on with King Crimson and this incarnation. There's another little part where I wanted to play, where Tony talks about his rig back then and Adrian and into the drum set, and then kind of how he's going to interpret the guitar. And then we'll play it. You guys can check it out on your own. Sorry for the doubling up and the echoing and the audio quality here. We're just trying to get through this a little bit so we can get to the end. Check it out.
Tony, what was your rig back then?
Four-string bass, Music Man, like I use now, although I have a five-string, finally. Yep. And the Chapman stick, which has a bass side and a guitar side. However, I put them both through a whole lot of pedals. In fact, one day we counted and I had the most pedals of anyone in the band, which was an embarrassing 31 pedals.
31.
I don't remember what they did.
A man after my own heart.
Oh my gosh.
I will not be touring with 31 pedals this time. I'll probably have one multi-unit. I'm not sure which yet. But I use a lot of pedals. Most of the time, not so, but sometimes just having it there to kick in when things get weird was good. We also improvised a whole lot, mm-hmm. especially on one of the albums. I forget, was it Three of a Perfect Pair? Was
Three of a Perfect Pair.
Yes, definitely has playing, a lot of improvisation on it.
Well, big fat bass notes, not appropriate.
And
that,
by know. That point, you had added the Moog, I think it was a Moog.
I played a lot of synth, and I will on this tour.
Fabulous sounding things.
I think I have the same synth.
So, yeah. Danny, what would be your drum kit? I know you have with Tool, you have this mega kit and everything, but a kit for this might be what?
Well, I'll probably try to use a lot of the sources like that Bill did at the time, just because it's kind of a necessity for those songs.
Yeah.
So I'll have my electronic pads. There's kind of an updated version of a Simmons kit that I actually use with Tool.
Yeah.
It's a program called Battery that I can just load
battery,
all the
stuff. Battery 4, is that the one you use?
Yeah, whatever the most recent battery version 5, is. Yeah. I actually got Bill's Boobams, the acrylic ones. They're Dragon drums, actually. I got those from a guy over in England, had a drum store, and he was selling off a bunch of Bill's stuff, so I purchased those, so nice. I'll have at least a few of them. I think he had five or six of them or something, you know, so
that's
I'm gonna
nice,
try to
nice
emulate
memory.
Those ride patterns and stuff on those, and then then other than that, just some acoustic things, a Roto Tom, of course.
I've been
using a Roto for ages, and I used to have a whole set of them that I played on, but one's sufficient for this, I think, you know, and then a couple of toms, like acoustic toms, and a usual array of cymbals, and
at the time that I was asking him if he could do this, I sold him a drum kit I had of Bill Bruford's, the yellow kit from the 90s band.
Wow.
It was gifted to me by someone who won it in a contest. Todd Harrington is his name. He won it 17 years ago. 12,000 people entered. He won the kit.
Incredible.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
And he wanted his son to play it. Son never took interest in it, and gradually he started coming to our band camp that we have every year and got to be good friends. And one day he called me up and said, I've got Bill Bruford's drum kit, and told me all about how that happened. I'd like to drive it to you, you know, could we have dinner? I said, well, I think we'd have dinner, yeah.
Pretty cool. So the kind of cool little history there behind how all these guys kind of know each other, how everything kind of came to be. What do you think of all that?
I mean, to me, that's in a very enriching little couple minutes there.
Yeah.
Seeing the interaction. They're really sort of like this little community that interacts often. They're selling stuff. It reminds me of like how skateboarders used to be back in the day.
Right.
Like they're, you know, they're hanging out. They're talk to technical stuff, and they've got their sort of, you know, it's that feeling when you know people who know what you know.
Yeah, they know what they're talking about. And, they know
and,
what they know.
You know, and there's only a few people that can appreciate it quite in that same way.
Yeah, definitely.
It's fun to see that. I mean,
yeah,
really,
it is.
It's they just love they love music.
Yeah, and
they
love
to make.
That's where it comes. It comes from this place of kind of honesty and passion, and they're just musicians talking shop and excited to take on this challenge. And so, yeah, it's really a cool thing. I want to get a picture of these tour dates here for you guys. Here it is at beat-tour.com. As I mentioned, I'm going to be checking out the Napa show at the Blue Note Summer Sessions at Meritage Resort in Napa. So I'm very excited to check that out. Sounds really fancy and cool. San Jose, they're going to be in L.A., Anaheim, San Diego for the California dates. Then they're going all over, including a stop in Toronto, Montreal. They're all over Canada. They do like 5 shows there, and then a bunch of East Coast states. They come through the Midwest and back to Las Vegas at the Virgin Hotel in November. So it looks to be a really awesome tour. Of course, people are hoping that it's going to be more than this, a world tour possibly. They're very big in Japan. You know, King Crimson and some of these other super fans of these musicians would love to see this tour. So hopefully it does sell out wherever they go on this U.S. tour and be a successful tour for them. And I'll let you guys know as soon as I check the show out and any updates that come along. All right. So, yes, you are absolutely correct with your guess, David. Kiss sells logo, brand, music, and everything.
$300 million.
$300 million.
So, Kiss. But I wasn't correct with my joke guess. It wasn't $666 no. million.
It should have been $333 million.
That's what
that,
all
right?
The scared parents in the United States thought.
Well, I guess the rights now belong to a company called Pop House Entertainment Group. It's the company behind ABBA's popular live Avatar show. They plan.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So that's going to be fantastic. Everybody loves that.
They're
going to be launching the same Kiss Avatar show in America type of deal. Use the same technology, rather. Gene Simmons, Kiss the touring band is over. What Pop House will do with our images, our music, our persona is unlike anything anyone has ever seen. Billboard reports that the Kiss Avatar show will open in an unspecified U.S. city in 2027. Interesting, huh?
2027, huh?
That far ahead.
Unspecified.
I don't know.
It's going to be in Modesto.
I would guess Las Vegas.
Yeah,
I had to guess.
Probably.
I mean,
isn't this kind of the thing we were talking about with virtual reality, like the VR? Don't you think that this kind of a...
Yeah, it definitely falls right into that. It's a virtual band. It's like a band. And what's to stop them from doing this with, like, Jimi Hendrix or any of the, you know,
and they
musicians of the past?
And they put you in the... what's the place that U2 is at right now? The Orb?
Oh, the Sphere.
The Sphere, right?
In Las Vegas?
There's a big giant
TV, I mean, that,
screens.
This would be right up that alley for sure.
People running around with VR headsets.
And Gene Simmons with a towel on his head.
There's a towel on his
head.
And
his
like,
makeup
is
peeling off.
It's his makeup. He's about to wipe his face.
Yeah, it's like at the end of the show or something.
I see.
But anyway, so there you go. $300 million for Kiss's catalog. Not a bad deal for them, huh?
Yeah, right? I mean, shoot, I wish I had sold myself for $300 million.
New album came out on Friday. A bunch of new albums, but one of the highlights was the Black Keys' new album, Ohio Players, featuring a bunch of musicians on this, guest musicians. That was the kind of the theme. It's got Beck on there, Noel Gallagher, ZZ Top's Billy Gibbons, Dan the Automator, Juicy J. They cover the whole gamut there on this album. It's a pretty solid album, too. Have you heard anything from it yet?
No, not yet.
It's really good. We'll listen to it off
the air. I do like that they've got someone from 3-6 Mafia.
Juicy J. That track is Beck and Juicy J on that track. And
really?
Yeah, I think I'm pretty sure. It's the same track, and it's pretty good. I'll have to play it for you.
Is it bowling-themed, like the album cover?
No, there's nothing bowling-themed about it, other than I guess it's a Midwest pastime. I don't know.
I went bowling this week.
Yeah? Nice. How'd you do?
Well, we played two games. On the first game, I had, like, one of the worst scores. And I told everyone, mark my words.
I'm coming back,
and I'll be number one. And you know what?
And you got it?
I did.
Nice.
I killed it the next game.
Wow, that's good. All right. Well, so the album's out now, and we'll talk about a bunch of new albums that are out this week in just a bit. But real quick on AC/DC, selling 1.5 million tickets in just one day. It's pretty awesome. Booking venues for the tour wasn't easy to schedule, I guess. In Europe, they got the Olympic Games going on in France during the time that their tour is going to be happening in May through August of this year. So European Football Championships happening in Germany as well. The weather was another factor for the outdoor shows in Italy and Spain, where shows last summer had to be delayed due to the extreme temperatures. So they were trying to figure out ways, you know, all that stuff got canceled.
Man.
So I think that's why there was such a big response as well. Is once they announced these new dates, you know, it's kind of rescheduled from last time. They're like, you know, all about it. So this is a unique lineup of AC/DC as well. Newest member Chris Chaney on the drums, Matt Logg, Steve Young, Angus, and Brian Johnson. The shows will run May through August of this year. So it looks to be a big, big European tour for them. All right, we got some birthdays this week.
Let's get to it. Birthday time.
All right, David, take it
away.
All
right, these are birthdays from April 1st to April 7th. So we've got Jimmy Cliff was born in 1948 on April 1st. Greg Camp of Smash Mouth, born 1967 on the 2nd. David Robinson of the Cars, born on the 2nd. He's born in 1953. Mike McCready of Pearl Jam was born in 1965 on the 5th. And John Oates of Hall & Oates, born in 1949 on the 7th. Mick Abrams of Jethro Tull, born in 1943 on the 7th. John Barbata, Barbata of Jefferson Airplane and Jefferson Starship is 79 years old. Sebastian Bach, lead singer of Skid Row, is 56.
Wanted to throw that one in with the Trailer Park Boys.
He's
made a couple appearances on their show. And I also highlighting the clogs. They're wearing Danish clogs. Those wooden, like, what are they called? Clogs?
Yeah,
yeah.
They're little Danish, Dutch,
yeah.
Hollander
Dutch
clogs.
Yes, yeah.
I have a question.
Yes.
Was he on the Gilmore Girls?
Who, Sebastian Bach?
Yeah.
Maybe. Could have been.
Think
I don't know. I have no idea.
I think he was in the band on the Gilmore Girls.
Well, then, yeah, if he was in the band, probably.
Dude, okay, I'm going to have to look that up.
That's hilarious. So they did a cameo there?
Yeah. No, he was like a character.
Oh, like a recurring character?
Yeah, he was like a recurring character. I'm pretty sure.
That's
okay.
Hilarious. All right.
Emmylou Harris.
Yes.
The great Emmylou Harris is 77 years old.
Doesn't she look fantastic?
Yeah, she looks beautiful.
All right. Good for her, man. All right, we got some trivia. Trivia time. Let's go.
This week
in rock and roll history.
Trivia?
Yes, this week in rock and roll history trivia. This week, April 4th, 1913, this blues icon is born. He passed away in 1983. Who had their birthday this week? Was it Robert Johnson, Muddy Waters, John Lee Hooker, or was it a little-known artist by the name of Catfish Crosby and his old-timey jug band? David Crosby stands over a makeshift fishing hole on stage and catches catfish with his bare hands like Huckleberry Finn while freebasing cocaine from Paul Bunyan's Bowie knife. It was a popular show at the time.
Yeah, it was. It
you got
like,
1913. I mean,
well, I'm trying to figure out what a makeshift fishing hole.
Yeah, right.
Well, on stage is like.
I think it was just
like
a bag.
Barrel?
Of, yeah, it was
did
just
like
yeah,
a barrel.
A barrel of water with fish in it.
A barrel.
And he would stand over it with a fishing.
Kinda
pole.
Kind of easy to catch the fish though.
Yeah,
but I heard that I heard that the whiskers on a catfish hurt you when you touch them.
Oh, really?
So I wonder if he maybe.
I think he
got
he
a
liked
jolt out of that.
I think he liked that.
Got a jolt. So I'm going to say, let's go with Robert Johnson.
Robert Johnson. Let's go with Robert Johnson. Muddy Waters.
Muddy Waters.
It was
that.
Muddy Waters, born on this, well,
he died
April 4th.
When I was a year old.
Really?
Yeah.
That's right.
Look at that.
Muddy Waters there. April 4th, 1913. What a legend. All right. New rock and metal albums out this week. David, take it away, man.
All right. Alpha Wolf, Half Living Things.
I think this one's in the category of the Master P kind of style.
Yeah, that's, I mean,
for
but
heavy
it's
metal.
Got like the painting sort of
right,
like aesthetic. That's pretty cool looking. But it is interesting that it is heavy metal and it's very,
hip-hop.
Very much looks like a hip hop album.
Yep. All right, so there you go.
A little bit of fusionism.
Fusion.
All right, Bayside. There are worse things than being alive.
I guess, yeah, that's a good point.
Bayside. Is that like Bayside High?
I guess, yeah.
From
Saved by the
Bell.
Yeah, that's yeah. them. That's Saved
that
by the Bell
Bayside.
Now.
They go hang out at the
yeah.
Max.
At the Max.
Yeah.
Yep.
The Black Keys, Ohio Players, we were just talking about.
Yep.
Blacktop, Mojo, Pollen.
There you go. Cars covered in pollen.
Pollen, yeah, look at that, pollen. Disbelief, Killing Karma. Traditional, good. Era, Cure. Another quite traditional looking album. Hood Rats, Crime Hysteria, and Useless Information.
Yeah, let's take a minute to appreciate the album cover here.
Yeah, I'm liking that. Okay, so we've got a DJing police officer.
Yep.
With a, you know, sort of a middle class dad.
And then looks like there's a
like
priest.
An engineer being burned at the stake.
And another cop enjoying the fact that they're lighting somebody on fire there, like a little pyre, funeral pyre.
Yeah, what's the meaning of this? And there's a dead police officer on the ground, isn't there?
Yeah. So there's
with
just
a little air
blast.
Horn.
I don't know. He's got a little.
Or is he drunk? Maybe.
No, he's blowing a party favor thing there.
I like this.
He definitely does look drunk. He's got a bottle of
there's something to that. I'd like to hear the story. Hood rats, can you reach out to us and
yes, please.
Tell us what's going on there. Horndahl, Head Hammer Man, Iron Monkey, Spleen, and Goad.
Yes. That's a cool vinyl.
That's pretty cool looking.
All right. What else?
Which vinyl? Oh, no, wait. White Dog, Double Dog Dare.
Yes. And then, yes.
And then we got Witch Vomit. Funeral Sanctum.
A very good family, you know, if you got the kids in the car and you're going to
Vomit.
Going to Disneyland or, you know, out to dinner.
Going over the hill and through the woods to grandmother's
house.
Throw
that one on. Throw that one on there. All right.
All righty.
Movie, TV, entertainment news. Hart is going to be on the Tonight Show this week on April 8th. Anne and Nancy Wilson, they're reunited now, recorded, touring together. You got a huge tour, so they're going to be doing that with Joan Jett and the Blackhearts, Cheap Trick. Don't miss them on Fallon this week on April 8th. Check out their live performance.
That's good.
Speaking of that, also on April 9th, late show stuff here, Conan O'Brien set to make his long-awaited return to The Tonight Show. First time in 14 years since he was abruptly fired from that position, if you remember all that crazy controversy.
I don't really remember that.
Yeah, it was kind of wild. I guess Jay Leno said he could have the job and then decided he wanted his job back for a while and kind of did the switcheroo. And
so when Conan O'Brien was on a show, he wasn't on The Tonight Show? Did he have like some other? Oh, there you go. The late night with Conan O'Brien.
Yep. For almost two decades. And after his departure from The Tonight Show. So he did Late Night with Conan O'Brien.
Late Night,
right?
Then he switched over to The Tonight Show.
Tried to do The
fired.
Tonight Show as the next host to succeed Jay Leno. Jay Leno didn't want to go at that time. I guess he changed his mind, and that was the whole dick move part about it. Like, he's like, yeah, sure, you can be my successor, and then he changed his mind.
But then
he had
already given up the late night with Conan O'Brien.
So then he went on to host Conan on TBS for 11 years. So he did Conan after that in 2009. He's been doing that for the past 11 years.
Oh, I haven't really paid much attention. I didn't know that.
Yeah, and it's
TBS. I didn't get the TBS.
Yeah, it's a shame. I mean, you know, it never was really that popular because of all of that.
He's a funny guy.
He is. He's fantastic. He's hilarious. So he's going to be on April 9th, so he's going to be talking about his new series, Conan O'Brien Must Go, which is going to be streaming on Max. So there you go.
Conan, and so the new Tonight Show, that's Jimmy Fallon, right? I always forget all the different ones.
I guess, yeah. Okay. I don't know. Okay. Tonight Show's with Jimmy Fallon now, I guess. Yep, that is true. Yeah, because we were just looking at that Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon. So there you go.
Okay.
Yep. All right, Melissa Etheridge docuseries spotlighting female prisoners in her hometown. It's coming on Paramount Plus, and it's spotlighting. So I guess she wrote an original song inspired by letters from five female residents of the Topeka Correctional Facility in Kansas in her hometown. So she did this cool thing with Paramount Plus. It's called I'm Not Broken, and it focuses on these prisoners and her plan to create and perform the song for the women. It aims to shed light on the challenges faced by incarcerated women, substance abuse, generation trauma, all that stuff. So, you know, she's hoping it'll raise awareness, provide support, struggling with addiction. Sounds like a good cause, right?
Yeah, that sounds cool.
And so it's on Paramount Plus. It's called I'm Not Broken. And it doesn't say when it's coming out. So sorry about that, but looks to be coming out soon. All right, news from around the world. Watching a solar eclipse can cause permanent eye damage, so don't do it. I can't believe how many people are thinking that they can just like, I'm just going to wear regular sunglasses or peek out my blinds or, you know what I mean? You could be our president
blinds.
Where he's just like looking up in the sky.
Yeah, Trump did that. He's like, nah, I got the glasses. Best. I have the best.
It says they surveyed 1,000 people, and here's what they said. They said 10% of Americans mistakenly believe that an eclipse can cause natural disasters, sleep problems, and mental health issues. So they all think that solar eclipse is kind of, you know.
So it can do all those other things, but they don't mind looking at it, right? It's like the one thing that it does do. It
says they thought that wearing sunglasses and briefly looking at the sun were safe for the eyes. However, even just a few seconds can lead to permanent blindness without any signs or symptoms.
Yeah, so. I had a last one, I think in 2017, I was doing a class when the eclipse happened, and I wasn't going to take my students out to look at it, even though I am a geography professor. But I was like, no, I'm not taking them out there. This is too risky, right? Then the passing period happened. Students from the outside came in, and I had a student like, did you see that? He said to me, did you see the eclipse? And I was like, no, I couldn't see. I was like, did you see it? And he's like, yeah, I looked at it. And I was like, did you wear something over your eyes? Yeah. He's like, no, I just like squinted my eyes. I was like, no. He's like, my eyes are fine. I was like, you realize that your retina gets damaged and that damage can like hit you later.
Yep. Macula all the way in the back there.
And
the
you do not want macular degeneration.
Nope.
Paul Harvey will come after you and give you all kinds of vitamins and stuff.
Don't do it, kids.
Yeah.
Don't do it. All right. What do you think about potatoes may not be a vegetable much longer?
Oh, not considered a vegetable?
Yeah, because I guess they're saying because of all the starches and things. 14 lawmakers have written to federal agencies protesting a possible change about this. I had no idea.
All the Idaho lawmakers. Right. It's a vegetable. That's the only one I know how to eat.
It says potatoes provide nutrients, blah, 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 like potassium, calcium, fiber, but they're higher in carbs and have a higher glycemic index. Changing classification of potatoes could impact school lunches, other nutrition programs. That's why it's kind of like, here's your serving of vegetables for the day, and it's French fries.
Yeah.
So, right?
Yeah. I mean, really, didn't we already know this? Like, how is this just getting to the government? This shows you how screwed up the way that
lobbying works.
Lobbying for, like, they go in and figure out how they can make a French fry a healthy option.
Yep, and that's all lobbying from the potato industry. So it's finally starting to get around. But, you know, hey.
I mean, shoot, guys. Don't you realize you don't have to call it a vegetable? We'll still eat it.
Yeah.
Right? We love those things.
It's the way that they want to lobby for that.
Yeah, it really has to do with the fact that they can keep. I mean, shoot.
School lunches.
School lunches are really not nutritious.
They aren't. It's like because this shit's in there.
I'm told that, I was talking to someone who does the purchasing and stuff like that, and I'm told that they like fortify them and they give them like fake. Like, apparently the Pop-Tarts are like nutritious Pop-Tarts. I was like, I don't know if I believe that they're actually nutritious, but that's like the idea. So it's like, you take these kinds of things
and fortify them with nutrients.
Fortify them with nutrients.
Oh, now it's okay.
Now you've
very good point. Well, we'll see.
No macular degeneration.
All right, weekly WTF this week. NASA analyzing a large object that crashed through this guy's home. Florida man. They're determining whether it came from the International Space Station or not.
Is it one of those like poop?
No, this is actually a battery. Look at this thing.
Oh my gosh.
They're saying it's
corroded.
They're saying it's like the size of a football. Came through the roof of his house at 2:34 p.m. just in the middle of the day. It was caught by his Ring security camera. According to the UPI, U.S. Space Command recorded the re-entry of a piece of debris from the International Space Station around the same time over the Gulf of Mexico, with a trajectory taking it towards Southwest Florida. And what the deal is, his son was at the time, but no one was injured. I don't know why I deleted the part about it. It was this thing up here. They were supposed to be taking used batteries back into the Earth's orbit, and supposedly some kind of a malfunction happened, and the batteries all came out. And so they all just like went random places, which is like terrifying to think.
So how many batteries?
It was a lot.
We just know about the one that hit Florida.
Yeah.
What about the one that hit? Good golly.
Who knows? Yeah. So.
And really, that's it. What are the odds?
Yeah.
Florida's just that little skinny thing sticking out there.
Pretty crazy odds, right? It was supposed to land in the water there. They always plan for that kind of area, and then So pretty wild. So luckily nobody was injured. So. All right, mom's psychedelic toting adventure goes wrong. sounds like a great title of a book. 37-year-old Samantha Gonzalez smoked toad venom in Mexico in search of a spiritual experience, but she got more than she bargained for. I guess here's a picture of the little, like, ayahuasca fucking tent that they did this in. There's, like, some little, like, tent. And here's a picture of her and her husband.
Looks so wholesome.
Yeah, looks just like a regular, you know. So it says the experience caused her to vomit, feel waves of terror. She says, you feel like a baby again. And it was scary. It was scary for me. If I were to recommend this for somebody, I would recommend something where you get to spend the whole day with a facilitator. While some doctors believe that toad venom could be useful in treating anxiety and depression, medical experts warn the venom can be very dangerous and has a high potential for abuse. With a trauma-informed therapist like myself, it's one of the most effective ways, effective treatments for PTSD, Dr. Mike Dow said. Without therapy, it can re-traumatize people in a scary way. So she,
is that her right
that's
there?
That's her. This was like her little...
Right before she
yeah,
licked the
she
toad.
Was trying to take this this journey to, like, you know,
enlightenment,
self-discovery, you know, helping with her trauma. Great. Heard about, you know, toad venom, and then she was just
okay. Well, I could have told her that toads and licking toads is nothing
but
destruction.
It.
Smoked toad venom. Okay, because I haven't told you this story, but. When I was living in Thailand, we lived in the front of a house, and then the owners, like, lived in the back, and they had two pit bulls.
Okay.
And one day, you know, these pit bulls were really nice. You know, they were like the first kind of exposure I had close interaction with pit bulls, and they were really nice. And then one day we came home and the pit bulls were licking a toad.
Uh-oh.
And, this toad's there, and it's, you know, all, you know, and the pit bulls are just licking the toad, and they're foaming at the mouth. Just,
oh.
And then and their eyes got all dilated, and they were kind of staggering around. They were getting high off of this toad, and they both were doing it. And after that, they were absolute monsters to each other.
Oh, really?
They almost killed each other.
Oh, God.
And we had to deal with it every single day. So it was like, maybe what happened was that they got enlightened and they saw the truth of their relationship.
Yeah.
And they were like, yeah, this is, it's right. Hatred, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So I don't know. Maybe that was the truth and the light, but they were not nice pit bulls after that. They had to put them in cages.
Or they went
cages.
Too far and, like, they had a bad acid trip.
They just never came back.
They were just... You know, casualties of the acid scene in Thailand.
Yeah, man, alive.
Of the toad.
And
the
toad looked like that. It was kind of
big
like
old
that.
Fat toad.
But, I mean, this is a different country, so.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Crazy, huh?
Very interesting.
Careful with those toads, man. All right. Okay, so before you see this picture, there's this viral picture that's going around on TikTok.
Okay.
And it says, what you see first in the picture tells something about who
you
are.
Oh, yes.
You love those,
love this.
Right? Okay, so look at the picture.
Tell me how horrible I am.
Tell me what you see first, okay?
I see a woman looking sort of into the sky. That's what I see.
Okay, you see the woman's face first, right?
Yes.
Well, according to TikTok creator Mia Yelin, this can apparently determine whether or not you're easygoing or likable. This picture depicts hand-drawn flowers and a woman's face, which the artist notes that what you're going to see first can offer insight into your personality. If you saw the flowers, you're super easygoing and likable. You always see the best in others and have a hard time saying no because you don't want to disappoint them.
Okay.
And right? But if you saw the woman's face first, you're an emotional and passionate person. Okay. After relationships end, it can take months to move on, and you can't help but miss what used to be. You're a major overthinker and very smart. Whether you commit to something, you make it happen. You like to keep your circle small and have a few close friends as you find it difficult to trust most people. So.
But my question is, though, like, I saw a woman's face made out of flowers.
Right. That's my question, too, is that I feel like these things are designed.
I was like, look, a woman's face made out of flowers.
And look at how the way that the flowers are, like, shaped around this face as to, like, push and shape your direction of view to this,
towards
right?
Towards the face.
And then these flowers on the bottom are almost like just like an afterthought. Like it's meant purposely to obviously look like a woman's face, but it's all made out of flowers. So I feel like
she wants everyone to think that they're, what was it? Emotion. What was it?
The second one.
Where it says,
I'm not
super easygoing.
You're an emotional and
passionate
person.
And emotional person.
And you're an overthinker and very smart. So I don't know.
I think these things are just BS.
They're just total BS.
My feeling is this: there's no such thing as personality. It's all context.
Right. Yeah. That's
whatever
very true.
position you're put in. You can change someone's quote unquote personality.
I know.
Can change.
I agree.
It's just like what are they experiencing in life? So well, thank you, Mia Yilin.
Yeah.
Taught us a lot. But you know what? I like the painting.
It's a nice painting. Yeah. But it is silly. All right, that's it for us this week, guys. Make sure you always tune in, rocknewsweekly.com, on our YouTube channel, at Rock News Weekly, and we'll see you guys next week. All right, have a good one. Peace.
See ya.
Bye-bye.